Yeah, so I'm going to do a little bit of questions. I'm not going to share too much of my story, but I'm going to make a couple observations before I take the questions because it might explain a little bit about what you're wondering about the culture. One of the things that, having been to lots of these countries, I'm noticing each country has a specific thing that kind of sets them apart. And I struggled for a long time with sort of almost being judgmental against the Kenyans because to me they really seemed very far behind the rest of the third world. They didn't understand farming. They didn't understand weather patterns. Simple logistical things that other cultures had figured out. These people just didn't have this figured out. And I was real judgmental with it for a while until I finally linked it together with the AIDS epidemic that they're plagued with. And literally, the people are dying so young and so early, and all the children are born with HIV and AIDS. There's no transfer of knowledge. There's no, nobody is teaching the children and raising them up in ways of how to farm, how to provide for themselves. It's just every day is a survival skill. And so you can imagine how all that judgment just came rushing in on me there in the end. But it's interesting to watch. I kind of thought, you know, if you took the people of India and you put them in the same exact situation, they'd be light years ahead of the Kenyans. But the culture in India isn't such that AIDS runs so rampant. In Kenya, the reason AIDS runs so rampant is they have, you know, the men will marry multiple women. So that's the start of it right there. And then all the children are born with it already. And so it just spreads like wildfire. They're really, it's an overwhelming need. Shane mentioned this village where the children are being fed, those 70 children. That church is in the middle of a village full of orphans. And it's more than you can handle to watch these little kids just walk off into the bush knowing they have nowhere to go. And they could easily feed 500 every day if they had the resources to do it. And it's interesting, just you meet the different people. Some of them have real good vision for providing a answer to these problems that isn't just an American providing money. And so I work in the engineering industry, and so I always like to see people with a good plan. And I didn't see a lot of that there, and it was a little frustrating to me. But the pastors in this organization are amazing people with brilliant plans, and they aren't plans that are sustainable by man. They're plans that are sustainable by the Lord. So we're excited to keep working with these pastors, obviously, and they're pretty amazing. The other thing I just want to touch on, and Shannon really touched on it as well, is that I love how when she gets back up here to talk about 55.5, she says, "We know." We're just this huge family, and I'm telling you what, like, without everybody in this room and so many others, this work just doesn't go on. And for any of you that think you don't have a talent or a skill or something that could be of service, man, listen to these guys. Everybody that you just heard said, man, I didn't know what I was going to do when I went over there. Every one of us did multiple things that we had no idea, A, that we could even do, or that we were going to do, and the Lord, he'll fill you up with what you need. So with that, anybody have any questions? And if I can't answer them, maybe I'll call on some of the others that were there.
What's the average lifespan?
Oh, I think the average lifespan, maybe Mary can help. It was about 50 to 60, somewhere in there. Yeah, 56. There you go. Shirley.
Are you going again?
You know, we're already, while we were there, we went to meet up with another ministry that has been very highly recommended to us from some people that we trust. Mm-hmm. And they're already just asking us to come in either April or August of 2011. So I don't know if that's going to, you know, these things take a little while to pull all together. So we're praying about that right now. But I know we'll be there again. I can't imagine we wouldn't. The need is overwhelming. I mean, we're a drop in the bucket. We could build 1,000 of those widows' homes and not make an impact, you know. So
how many times have you been to this?
This was our first time here.
And how often or how frequent are there other ministries coming to them throughout
the year? Yeah, that's a good question. We were hearing from the ministry there that for a while when the economy was good that they were having up to 50 groups a year. But you got to keep in mind there's 256 churches that this ministry represents all around Kenya. So 50 groups a year sounds like a lot, but when you spread it over 250 churches, you know, it's not like they're in this area every week, you know. So they're all around. So now that the economy's down, what were they saying? Like they're down to 4 or 5 teams or something a year. That's what I'm hearing.
They had a group that was there the same time we were, but they're in Tanzania.
Yeah.
And building, you know, planning another church.
Yeah.
In terms of, I'm sorry.
Is Kenya the most primitive?
Ooh, I don't know.
No.
I don't think it is. They're actually a bit more advanced than some of the other.
Congo is probably.
Yeah, Congo.
Somalia is a failed state. There are several African countries that have no government anymore. So they're worse off.
Yeah. Any others?
I just wondered, the funeral that you did, do they have like a burial area?
Yeah, they do. They, in fact, one of those pictures I think even showed the hole. The funeral was, you know, just right there by the hole. You know, it's interesting being there. The big challenge, and you heard it all around town, was that there was a family trying to afford a coffin. You know, and that's not like something you'd hear all around town when there's a funeral, you know. And so everywhere I went, this poor family who's, you know, this man died, they were trying to raise money to buy the funeral, to buy the casket to bury him that day. The funeral was going on anyway. And, you know, I think about the time that we did the funeral, they had just got enough to get a casket so they could actually bury him. So, yeah.
In this vicinity, is it like a area like Carmichael to Sacramento, or is it a city within itself? And how many people lived in that area?
Ooh, I don't know the population. This is a bit removed from a large town. So Kisumu, which is about a 45-minute drive away, is a fairly large town, about probably the size of Carmichael, I would say.
Okay.
About somewhere in that. Yeah, there you go, 300,000. This is, you know, 45 minutes out, more rural. And the interesting, this area, the town is laid out on a long stretch of highway. And it's kind of spread along the highway, and when you get, and that's where all the main stores and things like that are. When you start to get off the highway, and you can walk for hours and hours and hours, and just walk through these grass hut villages, like where you see this. So that's the landscape setting just outside of that main road, and you can walk through those cornfields and all that forever, and just run across all these mud huts. So I don't know if that answers your question real well, but okay. Yeah. Does anybody remember the population? We're in Ahero is the name of the town, and I don't pronounce it very well. But I don't know if you guys remember. Anybody remember the population of that? I don't know if we ever knew.
It's
real spread out. Yeah. Yeah. Very sparse. Yeah. Yeah. So the main center of town where we would go through, it's interesting. Like in some ways, I kind of liked it. All the businesses grouped together. So if you're looking for wood, you just go to this one spot, and all the wood businesses are right there. You don't go here and then over there. But they're also all competing against each other. And so if you don't like this price, you just walk 30 seconds over here and go, okay, that guy told me this, how much, you know. So what you'll see is you'll see a lot of woodworking businesses where they make doors and windows like, that picture doesn't have it. They make wooden doors and wooden windows, things like that. You know, you walk down the way a little bit, and you'll see your fruit and vegetable, you know, vendors, rice, beans. Then you'll see shoes, you know, then you'll see. So there's nothing, there's no big business there. There's no big shops or anything like that. The hardware store that we were purchasing our equipment from was probably one of the bigger businesses I saw in town there. And even that was a real small operation. You know, they probably had 80 pieces of tin, you know, 30, 40 bags of concrete laying around, various materials here and there. And it wasn't a big operation. So it's small, very small. All of the businesses are in what they call curio shops, which are just little wooden makeshift shanty things. And there's a bunch of dusty, dirty stuff in front of it, hoping someone will come by and buy it. So
an AMPM would be like an 8x10 shack on the side
yeah,
of the road.
That's exactly.
I mean, you pull up and lift up their gate, and they
yeah,
stuff right out of it.
And there you'd have it. We bought while we were there, that feeding program that Pastor Joseph does for that village, we were able to buy about 3 months worth of food to leave there for them to use. And so when we went to purchase all that stuff, one of the ladies in the church, the way she earns her living is she buys rice one time of the year, and she saves it until all the rice is gone, and then she gets it out and sells it because she can earn more. So she'll buy it one time, she'll wait about 6 months, then she'll sell all her rice, and that's how she earns her living for the whole year. She only does this one time. So it was actually not the off season when we went and bought the rice from her, but we paid, you know, the higher price for her rice. And so with that, I mean, you know, she was just overjoyed. She had money to pay for the school fees for her kids, and, you know, she basically earned her living for the year in one day, when normally she would sit in one of these curio shops and sell little handfuls of rice at a time. So that's essentially how the living goes. And the reason she buys it all ahead of time is the businesses with money will come in, they'll buy all the rice, and then they'll just save it until everybody else is out, and then they'll get their rice out and sell it all at a real high price. And so she's doing this as a small, you know, type of thing. So she's competing against these bigger businesses. I think the average income was like $3 a day, somewhere in there, average. So you can imagine it's.
And don't they have a lot of cottage industry? They'll find some little, you know, corner that they can make something, mm-hmm, and sell it. Whether it's they can grow a few vegetables, they'll,
yep,
make it to market day. You know, they'll make some kind of woven baskets or just anything they can come up with, and then they,
yeah,
bring it to the market.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting that one of the things that you really find neat about the people is, you know, when you're out in the villages and you're working and stuff, you know, I'd have a power bar or something, and if I gave one to somebody, he'd immediately break it into 2, 3, 4 pieces, however many of his friends were around, and, you know, just hand it on. And, I mean, that's just their culture. They share everything. And the beautiful thing, when it came time to do the mud, you saw them doing the mud with their feet. When we were at Eunice's, one of the widows, Eunice's house, you know, it came time to do the mud, and they started mixing it up. There was 20 women that just came out of nowhere, all singing these great praise songs, stomping in this mud. I mean, they all just chip in and help each other, because it's every day is survival there. And so that's what inspires me about the pastors as well. I know the pastor we were working with, Pastor Joseph, of the 2 weeks that we were there working with him, I know there was 3 nights that him and his family didn't eat. They didn't have food. And I didn't know this till near the end. And this is how these pastors go. But when you'd see Joseph in the morning, he'd come up, you know, he'd come meet us and get ready to do our work. I mean, this guy had more joy in him from the Lord than, you know, like Shane described it. He's going. I mean, the guy's just full of joy. And to know that him and his family didn't eat that night, you know, it's like, wow, that's just amazing. And these pastors, they're serving their community. They're not serving themselves. And that is an honor to come and serve with them. So if you have anything to offer as far as going there to help them, they would be thrilled. Yeah?
How fast really is a hippopotamus?
I don't, Shane, where's, you want to take that, Shane?
They actually only top out at 78.
40, 45. That's pretty fast for a big animal like that.
I wasn't right on that one. I don't believe anything. Talk to Teresa.
Jeff.
I'm just curious, could you comment a little on the funeral, just sort of how God placed you into that.
Yeah.
What that was like for you. I mean, what an experience that was for you.
No, thanks for asking. So every morning we'd come down from where we were staying, and we'd stand in a big circle. We'd sing a Kenyan praise song. We'd pray, and we'd go off to do our thing. So I'm standing next to Pastor Joseph, one of the energetic pastors, you know, and we're getting ready to hold hands and sing. And he says, oh, so about 1 o'clock, you and me are going to leave from here, and we're going to go, and you're going to do a funeral, and then we're going to go do this. And he's laying out the day. I'm like, whoa, wait. I'm like, you said something about me doing a funeral in there. He says, yeah, about 1 o'clock. I'm like, yeah, okay, 1 o'clock. We'll just do a funeral. And, you know, like, that's the beauty of missions. The Lord always finds you right on the edge of your comfort zone and then says, yeah, watch this. And then he'll just push you out there. And there is something about that builds a lot of faith, because when the Lord pushes you that far out of your comfort zone, all you have is him to stand on. And to see him meet that need in you when you get pushed like that, you know, you come back changed. And so that was a huge event. So he did. He asked me to do this funeral, and it was interesting. I met the man who passed away the week before. I was at Pastor Joseph's church, and I met him there at the church. And then he was an old man, pretty ill. They have mosquito nets that they sleep under inside their mud huts, and they don't have electricity, so they use kerosene lamps. Well, his mosquito net caught on fire from his kerosene lamp, and he was too old and too slow and couldn't get out of his mud hut in time. And that was how he passed away. And so, you know, it wasn't until I was, you know, an hour into trying to figure out what I was going to say that I learned who he was and realized that I had met him, you know. And so, I mean, honestly, I was telling my wife this. I think I've only been to maybe 3 funerals in my life. I'm really sheltered from this whole side of the, you know, I didn't even know how they go. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anything. And so, you know, what do you do? I'm sitting there outside of Eunice's falling down mud hut with one of our driver's Bibles. And I'm like, okay, Lord, tell me what I'm going to say. And just like that, you know, he just pulled it all together. And I don't know. I think the message was okay. It was pretty encouraging to know that he was saved. And it allowed me an easy conduit to just let that crowd know why this man was saved and what he was experiencing now, the beauty of heaven, and then offer them some comfort from what the Lord shares in Scripture. So, I know everybody in our group had one of those moments, and on every trip, everybody in our group always has one of those moments. You never know what it's going to be. You know, that's kind of keeping our group moving in the same direction. A lot of times I'm volunteering people to help us do things, and I shouldn't find as much joy in it as I do, but sometimes when I ask somebody to do something, I can watch that internal freak out, you know? And I go, oh, I just saw that, like, oh, I'm gonna do what, you know? Well, that was mine, and it all came rushing back. And so I think that happened to me 3 or 4 times. And so I didn't feel so bad asking everybody else to go outside of their box, because I was certainly out of mine as well. I think we preached 6 sermons while we were there. We don't usually preach that many services. Usually we have Jerry Coronado with us, and he handles all that for us. Jerry wouldn't have been able to do all 6 anyway. So that stepped us out of, at least out of my comfort zone. I had to do a sermon and, I don't know, a few other things. So don't underestimate what the Lord can do with you. That would be the message of that. Any other questions? We're off the question subject, but.
I have one thing.
Oh.
I know, Teresa, and again, I want to thank you because of your blogging that you did while
yes.
they were gone with a sister over there. I was able to kind of be able to pray for you as a group, too. But do you have anything at 55.5 when you go on trips that we can log on to and keep in touch for those of us that stay behind?
No.
Okay.
That's the short answer. The long answer is we're overwhelmed with what we're doing already. If anybody has that skill or talent, what a blessing that would be. So.
Well, thank you, Teresa.
Yeah, Teresa, when we're lucky enough to have Teresa, then we get that kind of service. It's not always, we don't always have real good connection where we go, and so it just all depends on what kind of connection we can get when we're there. So, that's it. Well, thank you guys, and I hope encourage you that when the next one comes up, come with us.